Hello, and welcome to Soil Matters. My name is Tanya Lippman, and in the following episode, I interview Stephanie Wells. Stephanie Wells is the director of the Erotic Department of Extinction Rebellion Amsterdam. As well as being a hardcore climate activist, Stephanie Wells is a fabulous anti-fashion designer from the Netherlands. Before we go further, I find it important to pay respects to the Indigenous elders, past, present, and future, and recognize the Indigenous peoples from the soils across this planet. I recognize that many lands have been stolen. I met up with Stephanie in the Paper Jam office, a fantastic printing collective upstairs in the New Land in Amsterdam Oost. And we spoke about the XR erotic calendar that has been produced for the upcoming 2022. In this episode, Stephanie gives us a how-to on how to become an anti-fashion designer. We begin by hearing about Stephanie's first politically motivated decision.
Yeah, that was actually the beginning of my activism. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. My parents went
so
along...
So through a documentary, then you kind of got the idea, like, all right, I'm going to take my stand, at least in my life.
Yeah, I thought, I don't want to be part of that. And I liked meat very much. So it was not an excuse not to eat meat.
Mm-hmm. And it was a bit difficult.
No, it was behind it, so it was okay, my parents went along, but I noticed, none of my friends was into that. It was very difficult to find tofu, you know?
Yeah, back in those days, yeah.
You had
definitely.
To go to Toko.
Yeah, there was just like, one place, and then whatever options they had, like I grew up, and where I grew up, like there was just one soy milk.
Oh yeah, where was that?
Well, in Sydney.
Oh yeah.
I say in the 90s then, there was just one soy milk. Like that was the soy milk you bought, and then like, as time went on, then slowly more and more brands came out with, different milks and different products. But, in the beginning, it was limited.
Okay, it's probably comparable. You didn't have all the products. And at some point there was one, sort of nature shop. They had, like, a vegan croquettes, I don't know, the fried stuff.
Yeah. Like a deep fried
thing. thing. Very nice.
Crumbed.
I was the only person who did that in my whole environment. And
wait, you had vegetarian croquettes back then?
You did. But that's... it was just not like Albert Heijn has all the options. And no one was doing it.
Yeah, and how did your parents react?
Well, to my surprise, they acknowledged my choice in food, so they gave me the possibility to be vegetarian. Mm-hmm. So that was okay, because my parents were quite strict. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I got the chance to do that. And but when I left the home to study, I read more about it. I became vegan. Mm-hmm. But that was also, I'm also 50, I'm almost 50. So that is quite a time, some time ago. That was super weird to become vegan. So no one could understand it. You were totally alone. And it was a totally different time, and in restaurants they just didn't know what to do. But I was content with it.
And did anyone else around you take up like being vegetarian or vegan when you started talking
about it?
No one.
It was more like, but this country is so
milk-driven. Yeah.
This is one of the most difficult countries to be vegan. Yeah, it's getting much better now, but this country is floating on milk. So if you say I don't want milk, I don't think it's healthy and it's harmful for animals.
Yeah.
Then they consider you as totally weird. Anyway, but I continued.
Yeah, and what about, so your parents were teachers, so they must have, I guess they had quite a good idea then of like a broad range of things in society. I don't know what they were teachers in actually.
Yeah, Dutch and French.
Okay, languages.
Yes, well, but I must say, I was actually quite disappointed that my parents did not respond to the fact that you exploit animals. I mean, if you see that, how can you continue eating meat? I thought, well, how can you continue? You cannot be part of this torturing of animals. But they let me do it, so that's okay. But they didn't change anything.
And do you think their diet has changed slowly over time to eat less meat?
No, not at all. They don't give a shit, be honest. But I find that weird. If you have that knowledge, how can you not care about animals or the environment?
Yeah, take some kind of action.
Take some kind of action and... Yeah, I don't know, but it's part of their upbringing or I don't know. They are just... I don't know. They don't want to change things.
Yeah. And yeah, what can you do? Yeah, view on the environment and climate change.
Yeah, that was not so well known then, and I think they are very trusting in the government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't speak to them much in the present time because we have so big different opinions about everything that we're just not close in contact. But they put all the trust in the government, so they think the government will solve all the problems, and that's also the easiest thought. So they just live a mediocre life, working, have a house, have a car, and that's nice then.
Yeah, keep it steady.
Keep it steady.
And what did they want you to do when you finished school? Did they have an idea for you?
Yeah, that went a bit the wrong direction. They taught me. They talked me into studying a language, so I went to study Russian.
I see the relationship.
Indeed, but actually,
Well, that's very difficult. Studying Russian, I imagine.
Yeah, it's not an easy language, but also much later I found out that I didn't like languages. Well, I like, if I go somewhere, I like to speak a bit local words, but you have to be very precise in all the details of a language, and that's not my thing.
It's a big commitment to try to learn another language, to become fluent in it.
Yeah, then you have to know all the grammatical details, and it just doesn't interest me. But actually, I was even in the primary school, the teacher said, "Oh, she is so artistic," and that was actually what many teachers told me. So that was what I should have done. Only, well, I don't know how your life went, but my parents they think that is nice for a hobby.
Yeah,
you know, and they say, yeah, but do something decent. And so I went to study Russian. I did that for 7 years. I also studied a bit philosophy. But then I quit the studies. It was almost finished, but I was the final thesis took too much time. So I thought, now I have to stop because this will never end. And then I did the Rietveld Art Academy.
So that was a bit of a turning point.
That was a turning point.
But what made you go there? What was the prompt? Or that made you cross that line to take that step?
Yeah, very good question. Because always I thought I'm not good enough for that kind of education.
For art.
For art. Yeah, because of a friend, she went to the application process.
Yep.
And then I thought, you never even make something and you go to the application process. So why do I think I'm not good enough for it? Well, I make things my whole life. So then I went also to the application process. No, actually, then I came in quite easily. Yeah, that was I did it part time. So I did it in the evenings and
wow.
Yeah, that was quite heavy. And during the day I worked in communications. To earn money. You have need to earn some money,
you
of course.
Do in this world. And how old were you then?
Yeah. I was already then in the beginning of my 30s.
And you went to the Rietveld in the beginning of your 30s.
Yeah.
Were there other people also of a similar age?
Actually, in the part-time department, it was mainly either some people in their 20s and also several really old ladies who had a well-earning husband and they had enough time to... They had enough time to do it.
And so as their like sort of hobby or in their spare time, they're like, yeah, I'm going to go get an art degree.
Indeed. Well, yeah, they managed to get in. But no, there was quite a large part was, housewife with a husband that earns all the money.
Wow. Right. that was one of my dreams.
Yeah.
I'm a big lesbian, but like I had a dream.
A big one, even.
A big one, yeah. I had a dream growing up that I would be a housewife and that I would just like, yeah, go and do like a course and just have, like, this is so ridiculous.
Are you near to
have nice
dream?
Things. I would just have nice things and like someone would just pay the way and I would just like study, but out of choice, like for leisure and. Like, host a lot of people over at my house and, like, provide a really nice atmosphere for people. I just had this dream to sort of be a housewife. I don't know, like, because, well, there are lots of appealing parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
But am I close? Really not close. So far away from that dream.
What's your education then?
Oh my gosh, well, I went... Well, yeah, okay. After I finished school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I think I felt so insecure at that time. That's the reason. It's like, probably I did have an idea, but I would have been too afraid to say it out loud or like to even admit it to myself because I just found that too revealing. And
what was it?
I don't know. I'd have to think a bit longer. But maybe it would have been to do art or, like, something very creative. But I felt, because I was naturally good at sciences and maths, then everyone was sort of like, yes, do that because, I don't know, maybe because I was a woman that was good at, or a girl that was good at those things, and at school people really encouraged it. But I was also good at, and, yeah, enjoyed art and... also really enjoyed like woodworking. We had a subject of woodworking and I also really enjoyed that, but no one seemed to really like
encourage you.
Yeah like it didn't feel like there was sort of a path. Yeah, and so I felt also then like I guess leaving school a lot of pressure to do something like technical in the sciences, and but I didn't know what to do and I kind of didn't want to commit to anything, so I applied just for this, they had this program where you would go and work and they'd pay for your university and also give you, like, a salary money and you'd go to university part-time and work almost full-time, but this was doing an accounting job. So I worked for the government as an accountant for a year in this role because I just didn't want to commit to anything. And I thought that way I don't have to commit to anything and it looks like I'm doing something productive and everyone leaves me alone. And
it was a solution for that moment.
Yeah. So I did that and then I hated it.
Okay, yeah, okay.
What was interesting was I got to see a bit more how the government and government departments work because I was working with like the state rail and I worked on different projects. I worked with the state rail, I worked with the Department of Lands. So I saw how those departments worked and that was really interesting. Like I really, appreciate that and value that still now.
Mm-hmm.
But the accounting part of it, that's more like of a process like that I was interested in. But the accounting side of it, I don't want to help anyone make more money or so. But
you were quite young then.
Yeah, then I was 18. And then I went and then I bought a van and then I traveled around Australia with my partner at the time for about a year. And then I came back and then I went and studied psychology.
Oh.
And then on the one hand, I found it interesting, but on the other hand, I could also feel like it's not really for me. I don't feel really passionate about it. But I had to also do psychology was in the science department, and I had to do some science subjects. So I did some more environmental subjects.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved those. And then I just felt so interested in the things that we were talking about, and that I was learning the processes of the things that I can see outside and the history of them and how they're formed and what's going to form in the future. And I loved that. So then I transferred into another program, and I majored science, just a bachelor of science, and I majored in climate science. And and I guess that then I followed paths from that in some kind of like meandering way since then. Like that was the beginning of some life that I still lead now.
But I'm surprised that they had even a study in climate science already then.
Yeah, I was the first. I think I was in the first year.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There were only four of us in the program.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah, and was that real accurate knowledge then, or was it then not like the situation is alarming, or what was then the?
Yeah, so that was around late 2000, coming up to 2010, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So then. Like, obviously, yeah, then the Kyoto Protocol had happened, which happened in 1992, I think. So there was already, like, several international meetings at that stage, but very little commitment and very little international action and very little domestic action probably in any one nation at that stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's, like, something that people were talking about. People were talking about it being, like, in the future, like far away from now.
But
the science was already there. The international meetings were already happening, but nothing else was happening.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
It was just on stall, on pause.
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, that went fast then in 10 years.
Yeah, 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 it did. I think like probably, yeah, as we started to see, like, more extreme events, this has really made countries wake up because they realize, like, governments realize, oh, that's going to be a lot to deal with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe I do something now.
Yeah.
And so then I think, like, yeah, in 2015, then the International Paris Agreement, this helped countries a little bit take some more internal action within themselves.
Well, at least they had to acknowledge that there was something with the climate.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, and then we were talking your story. So, you finally began art school.
Indeed. No, yeah, then I was in my 30s. The art school was very nice. It was exactly fitted for me. But now it was a bit similar as you. As a child, I was good in artsy stuff, and I made already then things that no other children were making. But just I was not encouraged, and then it doesn't come to bloom.
Mm.
So I know I'm really glad that that I finally did it. So that was something I needed to do in my life, and I did the autonomous department, so you have to try all kinds of things, even things you don't like. But that's very useful. For example, you have to do performance, and I thought, oh, that's horrible. But in the end, you have to make it, you have to own it, and then you still can do something nice with it. But I was in the daytime, I had to make money, and I got a job in the government of Amsterdam, the municipality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to make money in not too much time, because I needed the time for the study. And I don't want to work in a commercial place, you know, to sell stuff that is crap or, you know. So I thought, I want to work at the government. They pay well. You can work part-time, and it is a soft environment, you know, it's not super commercial. So I thought that is not a bad option. So there, I started as a secretary, but I managed to go like a salmon against the stream. I worked my way to communications.
Mm. And what did you communicate?
No, well, I just wanted to. I'm not bad in writing, and I'm good at images, and I can make. I worked for many years on. Yeah, I switched the apartment every year, but I worked at mainly the website departments. Actually, they never gave me a contract, so it was all the time. It was temporary, but okay. But the knowledge I gained there was super useful for what I'm doing now. So,
in terms of what you're doing now, activism-wise or other things?
Yeah, activism-wise and making activism work. I was always working very hard for my communication projects, and I looked up a lot of stuff, and I also worked a lot with statistics. So then you really get an idea what works and what not.
What do you mean by communication, and with statistics do you mean like how well the communication is going, or what do you mean by what are you referring to, statistics about what?
Well, for example, we have the website of Amsterdam, and if you look what we were often pressured to place very the politicians and so, and the top, they want you to place many pieces about the policy and the direction, and I don't know the word for it.
The plan or the goals.
Yeah, but it's super dry stuff, eh?
Mm, like an outline, like a samenvatting?
Yes, or yeah, we have now this vision, and now we have this mission, and you know, they are very, you know, top down, and they have
very vague.
Vague, and also very in a special vocabulary that is not approachable for the common people. Mm-hmm. But if you look, for example, what people, you can see what people look up, And the thing that was looked at the most was the marketplace of the municipality of Amsterdam, where people sell their second-hand stuff.
So, and that was on the municipality website?
Yeah, that was the internal website.
Ah, the internal.
So, you know, the top want to place all kinds of heavy documents. Yeah, everyone has to read it. It's super important. But people are looking at, oh, can I sell my old laptop?
Yeah, yeah. Does anyone want to buy my car?
Yeah, so if that is the fact, you have to work with that. So, for example, I made some articles about that marketplace. And some people were really furious. That one time a woman was asking for a dog sitter because she was going a month away to Brazil and she needed someone to look after her dog. So I went to that woman. I wrote an article about her and her dog, and the dog even kissed me on the mouth. Really dirty. Yeah. But I had a funny picture of that. But I wrote an article about that, and that was looked at so many times. I mean, and but then some people got really aggressive. Like, why is there an article about a dog on our website? Well, I need my political document is not on it yet. But that is just, if you want to attract people, you have to listen to the people and not, you know, push stuff, you know, you have to seduce them to go there. And there was also some
maybe the dog can deliver the policy document to
exactly
the people.
Exactly. Yeah, I had some other thing, but I forgot.
All right. So you're at the Rietveld. You're working during the day at the municipality, publishing dog documents. And and then what happens after you finish at the Rietveld? Did you find the textile department there? Or...
No, it was actually I wanted to do at the Rietveld something more applied, but in the part-time you have hardly any options, so I did it autonomous. But yeah, it's okay, but with autonomous you can do actually anything, just you learn how to look at things differently, and you can apply that to anything, so that is fine. Now, after the Rietveld, I worked a bit more, but I was already then nearly 40. And, you know, the in the art world, if you are too old, you have no more chance on getting in the official circuit. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, like well-known galleries, they only want to work with people under 30.
Why is that?
Yeah, that's a very... commercial idea, then they can still young people are more hot, they can also form them a little bit. And like collectors, they prefer to buy work from young talent. So it has actually nothing to do with the quality of your work, it's just if you're too old
vulnerable.
You can you cannot get in that circuit. It's just, you also have like big painters prizes, but they're only available for people until 35. So why would your painting be worse if you're 36? It is a very closed world, and it's also one person knows another in the... I think in Rotterdam it's more open, but in Amsterdam, if you don't know the right people, you can forget about it.
Yeah, and I have the impression that, because Amsterdam is sort of, this very big city, then, you sort of already have to be successful in some way to then be successful in Amsterdam, whereas maybe in a smaller city, it's a bit easier to start from the bottom and work your way up.
Yeah, could be, but there are very, you know, secluded circuits of galleries. Mm-hmm. And for example, if you start to hang your work at the dentist's and the waiting room of the dentist, then you never should do that, because then no one else will take you seriously. Mm-hmm. So it's also important to be peculiar. No. Particular about where you do expositions. But no, I did a lot of group expositions, but not that I made any decent money with it. That's how it is. What can you do?
Yeah. So you're facing those challenges, but you've got a lot of experience with communication at the municipality. And
I earn my money with communication. I never work more than 3 days a week, because I want to have enough time for other things. And actually, communications, it's also very creative. You can it's not a waste of time. You can make really fun concepts, and it was not against my life plan or something. I enjoy it. Well, at the moment I don't work. I live off my savings. Mm-hmm. But I was happy with get the basic money from communications. It's totally fine.
And when did you start to work with textiles and materials?
Yeah, that was interesting. When I was really young, my old auntie said, "You should be a fashion designer," but too bad I didn't listen then.
Right. She said that all the way back then.
Yeah, indeed.
So your auntie encouraged you a little bit then.
Well, she saw that I was always making clothes for the Barbie dolls, and I was really, designing stuff for the Barbie dolls and sewing it together. So she said, yes, you are a big fashion designer in the future. And later on in your life, that's funny to remember. I was always a bit creative with clothes, and if I bought something, I always want to alter it. And at some point I just thought, I finished a ceramics course. And then I thought, now I want to make my own clothes. So that was just an brainwave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but clothes have always interested me. That was also when I was went to Amsterdam to study. At some point you need clothes, but then I already always bought secondhand clothes. And also then it was already known that poor countries are exploited for making our stuff.
Mm.
So that was, I already knew that then. It was not hidden. Already then I thought, I don't want to be part of that. So I always bought secondhand clothes.
Mm-hmm.
But I then, there was no action happening then in that subject.
Like, not a lot of talk of, but like, I guess I remember the first actions being, I guess, around boycotting certain companies that were really known for the way that they were treating their workers, like the slave labor.
Yeah. When was it, do you think?
Like, maybe when I was in high school, so around 2000. Like early 2000s,
but like against H&M or
it would have been about more like companies like Nike, Adidas.
Oh yeah,
those companies. Yeah, more international ones, because we were in Australia.
Yeah, I went to study in Amsterdam in 1992, and it was already then. It was just known.
That's very early.
It's very early, but everybody knew that. The cheap shops, they have it made in poor countries, and people were exploited. It was not that you cannot know it. So I always had an interest in a different way of Getting clothes, adapting clothes. So I was always a bit busy with it. Now, and a few years ago, I want to improve my sewing skills, so I took a lot of lessons. Actually, what was funny that I liked the African prints a lot. Although I know you can say something about that, but I was innocent. I thought I just liked it very much. And anyway, I did research on where it comes from, and I researched different opinions about it. But then I was asked by the African Fashion Week to show my stuff there.
Here in Amsterdam.
Yeah, here in Amsterdam. So I thought it was really very nice of them.
Yeah.
Because they were really, you know, they thought this celebration of our culture, and they were not looking like, oh, you're white, we don't want you. So I thought that was very, really inclusive of them, actually. Mm-hmm.
Because, so is that organized by African people?
By African people. Mm-hmm.
Here in Amsterdam, organized by African people, and then they invited you, which, yeah, I can see then that then you feel like quite welcomed into that situation.
I thought they were really, they saw my stuff on Instagram, and they, they were just looking for people who celebrate that kind of materials. And they invited me, so I thought, why should I say no if they invite me?
Yeah, they appreciated your work. And so you're using your new, your sewing skills, and you're learning them and experimenting with different prints there. And what was happening then in terms of climate change politics at that time?
Yeah, this was just a few years ago, so it is very recent. I think that was just about when, for example, Extinction Rebellion was coming into existence. Then actually, for me, climate change became urgent when I heard about the actions of Extinction Rebellion. So that was, I think, in 2019. So that's very recent. I don't know how it was for you, but maybe you knew it already. Before that, I thought, oh, we have like at least 40 years before we have to do something. It turned out to be much more urgent.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people thought that.
Yeah.
Or even still do.
Yes. And also, it was not much in the news. Where could you get that knowledge? Then the COVID came in, and so all fashion events were actually cancelled. So I thought I will put all my time in the climate activism now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I cannot...
Because of COVID.
Yeah, well, it came together. I wanted to do that anyway, but I thought, well, I cannot do anything in fashion. And also a problem with fashion is that you try to get people to buy stuff, but I think we should not encourage buying more stuff.
You're right, yeah, fair enough. It's about making more and selling more.
I was very enthusiastic about these prints. Actually, I wear one now, but then I thought, no, I
the
don't...
The African prints.
Yes. But then I thought, I don't want to work with new fabrics. You know, how it is made is just not sustainable. I stopped working with those prints.
And when you were at the African Fashion Week, and you said, okay, like, yeah, as a white person, you can look and see that perhaps some people will say there's something problematic with this paradigm. And Did you have any? And then you said, like, yeah, you looked up about where these prints and designs come from, and you tried to find out information, and yeah, you can see both sides of the story. Did you have conversations with people at the Fashion Week about this?
Well, not really, not there, but I did notice that some people looked at me like, what are you doing here?
Were there other white people there?
Yeah, several, many, many. Okay. It was just super open or openly organized.
Mm. And but also African designers. So mixed.
Yeah, mixed. Yeah. It was really, I thought they did that very nice. It was very, you know, so, yeah, welcoming to all people who like this kind of prints and style. Yeah, well, it didn't come to, I just noticed that some people thought, they looked at me like, what are you doing here? But actually, I was invited, you know.
How do you know that's what they were thinking?
Well, yeah, if they are, have photo moments and they ask everyone except the white people. But no, they're not all, yeah, I mean, that is not all. Some looked like that, others didn't. But yeah, I did quite some research on the material, and yeah, I think if African people invite me to that event, should I say then no, because it's inappropriate? That is also weird, eh?
Yeah, I think there's no right or wrong answer, and I think it's an open discussion. Like, I think it's something to think about, and I think it's good to think about it, and good to, like, be aware, and, yeah, I guess I would be interested to how they feel, because I think that's what it comes down to in the end, is, like, in that situation of the white person and people coming from Africa, I guess the person coming from Africa is a bit more the person that is vulnerable in from the minority, and so then it's like that voice needs to be heard. So
yeah, I asked really a lot of people, actually a lot of people from Africa, they think it's great that you wear this kind of print. Actually, there was one guy, he was from Suriname. He said, if you wear this print in my country, it's a big compliment. Because normally this print is viewed as poor man's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wear it, it is actually great. And now I asked around to investigate opinions. And also I went to Africa 2 times because I was very curious how this material was used and how people would respond to my clothing. I thought maybe they find it offensive, then I can draw conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
But actually they think it's amazing if you wear their kind of prints, and they think it's a compliment. And no, honestly, then I think it would be strange if I would say, I know it better than you.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough. I see that point.
Yeah.
And I guess, the problems would be, like, exploitation or not acknowledging the history or the heritage and the evolution of these prints and materials and the customs around that, and
yeah, to try and claim them. But these prints are actually not from Africa, eh?
Because they have been evolved. Or what do you mean by that?
Well, the technique is from Indonesia, the printing technique, and the designs are often made in the Netherlands.
Mm.
But I know you can say things about that, but I mean, it is not a strictly African product. So, well, anyway, but at some point I thought, well, okay, it feels sensitive. I was, I started using them, you know, from an honest idea, but okay, it feels, I stopped working with it because many of the prints, all of the prints are not made sustainably anyway. And a lot of them, they are now printed in China. So, yeah, that's not something I think I want to encourage.
All right, I'm going to ask two more questions and then shall we play a song?
Okay.
I want to ask, well, what is it about XR that made you realize that that climate change is happening now, that we're facing a climate crisis now? Because there were other climate change action groups before. And of course, yeah, so then XR came along and it changed your view. And then the other thing I want to ask, and I just ask it now because we're sort of on this topic, is, yeah, what do you think about the inclusivity of XR? And XR got a lot of fingers pointed at them, especially, I think, when they first started, about not being inclusive because of the way that they do their actions of being very much like, okay, we just go and we lie down in the middle of the road, we get arrested, we fill up the courts, we fill up the police stations, this is one strategy. And of course, that's a different, you're doing a different, if you're a person of color, a white person, that means a different thing to go through that process. So yeah, they're the two questions.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I think XR is a much more low entry organization. Like what else did you have? Nothing like it you had before. Like you have Greenpeace, but they're not on the streets, approachable for everyone.
Yeah, it's true.
So I thought it was a quite inviting organization, and you know, they make all the stuff themselves, and it's just very easy to join, and it's also not, you don't have to sign up anywhere everywhere if you. You know, it's not an obligation to be a member or something. And also, they have the regenerative culture where they really take care of people after demonstrations and also in demonstrations. Have you been in demonstrations? Or?
Yeah, not as part of XR, but otherwise, yes.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know how that is in other groups, but there are always lots of people, they have cookies and bananas and drinks, and they ask how you're doing, and if there are conflicts, they try to solve it, and they take very well care of the people, so it's not like, oh, go to a demonstration, totally get burnt down, and goodbye, good luck with it.
Yeah.
So, I like that kind of approach.
Yeah, it's more caring.
It's more caring.
Which is like sort of a turn from, yeah, a lot of action activist groups, I guess. And not, yeah, they were much, yeah, maybe rougher or just a bit more being ignorant of how to, I don't know, maybe the idea had just never been there before. It was a bit more like everyone looks after themselves. You go out there, you put yourselves on the line. If there's a legal problem, we've got support for that, but otherwise,
yeah. No, indeed, I don't know how that came up, but they're putting quite some effort in that part of the movement. Well, it was just that I had a date one day, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to a demonstration of Extinction Rebellion tomorrow," and then I started to look it up. And then I thought, well, if I complain about the climate, I have to do something and go to the demonstration. I mean, sitting at home at the couch and complaining, I mean, that solves nothing, eh? So I thought, now I have to do something now or shut up about the climate. I joined the demonstration then, and I really liked the people, the atmosphere, and yeah, that's how I came involved. Yes, and as the inclusivity is regarded, yeah, what I think is, if you want to involve a broader audience, I think HR should make a really much more of an effort to go to those people you want to get involved. And you know, so far, this is my opinion. Then,
yeah, you're not an official spokesperson for XR, so I don't see you as that. So yeah, you're just speaking for yourself.
Yeah, but what I notice, I think if you have the whole, you know, vocabulary is quite elitarian.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you can demonstrate in the white center of The Hague and shout elitarian slogans, but I don't think that will lead to getting totally different groups involved. So it is more, I think if you want to do that, I already actually was looking at options to start that. Then I think really you should go, you know, should go in the country. For example, if you take a cliché, why don't we do something in the Belmer where you have much different people and work together with those people, you know, not go there and say it is like this, but invite them. I'm sure the climate is concerning them as well. Actually, in my, I'll show you the pictures later, but there is one woman from Jamaica, she is living there, and she also said, yeah, maybe we can organize something in the Bijlmer and we can make it more, you know, low key. You know, not protests, but yeah, if you want to involve, if you want to really to include more people, I think you really should listen to those people, go to those people. You should really make an effort. I think it concerns them a lot. They read the news, but just go in the center of The Hague. And shout slogans, that will not help.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that is the step that needs to be made.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of young people, a lot of families living in the Belmer, and well, maybe not the families so much, but the young people are maybe interested in being more active. And
agree, but because recently, for example, I went to do some postering. And some guy from Turkey or something, I don't know, I didn't ask his background, but said, oh yes, what so great what you're doing, and I'm also really concerned about the climate. But you never reach that kind of person the way we act now. I mean, that person will not sign, you cannot sign up, but I mean, it will not come along because it's just so, the threshold is so high, it is not inviting.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, you could go there to schools, you could, for example, do something with fashion on the Belmer square, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or well, yeah, mm-hmm. There should be an effort made to reach out and not just wait till they come.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
Yeah. All right, let's play a song and then hear more about
Sextinction Rebellion.
Just before our song break, we were talking a bit about the discussion around XR being inclusive or not inclusive, and is their type of protesting a bit uninclusive to people of colour? And I guess in the song break, we also kind of had this idea that that other action groups before XR had not really been perhaps so different, but it was just maybe more obvious with XR because of the size. And it's not that other activist groups had been particularly inclusive before that time. for the most part. Not all activist groups, of course. But I guess the fact that it was pointed out so loudly has definitely just been a learning curve for everyone, and I hope has like has led to positive changes either in XR, well, both in XR and other groups. But then, like, from your involvement in XR, then you, with some other people, then came to the idea to begin Opulence, which was a short-lived, very exclusive fashion label.
Yeah. Well, I joined the department of fashion of Extinction Rebellion, and I thought, well, how can you draw the attention of the fashion world to give a message, bring a message across? So I thought, well, then we have to launch a label. If you launch a label, that sounds exciting. People will be looking, and you get press coverage. So that was the idea.
And the costume, the outfits were very like runway material, I think, because they were very extravagant and out there. They weren't just everyday H&M lines.
No, you know, yeah, I thought if you do it, you should do it well. So we collected some designer rebels who just are super good designers. And of course, we were not going to work with new stuff. So an idea was that we use banners that are out of date. For example, because they were about a time that was already in the past.
Yeah, and that's actually very resourceful because, yeah, I have banners that are sort of not relevant anymore, and I feel sad to throw them away because they hold really good, strong memories, but at the same time, they kind of take up a lot of space and are just gathering dust, and I don't know what to do with them.
Well, maybe you should start the second collection then. yes, and it's often a very decorative material, with the big letters, and it is about your message and your movement. So we collected lots of banners, and we made outfits. Like one guy made, for example, we had a banner, and he made an outfit that was saying, he changed the letters, and then the outfit was saying, "Wear me more." So that was a nice twist to the original text. And also we had, I collected, you know, Shell Must Fall. You know them, of course.
Mm-hmm. Shell Must Fall.
Yeah, and Shell Must Fall. That I agree to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I asked them for some banners, and they gave us really nice yellow banners with black letters, and we made a super hot wedding dress out of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did anyone get married wearing the dress?
Well, marriage is overrated, don't you think?
Yeah. We don't need to ask the government for our permission to love.
Indeed. Actually, the dress, I don't know if you've seen it, I can look it up, but the dress was, no, that was spectacular. It was on the, here it had the big shell, but it said, "Shall we stop?" And, no, it was noticed and by people from the UK, and they asked to use it at the COP. So actually, the dress is now in
at the
COP.
Oh, we need to get a photo.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it. Anyway, no, that's great because the clothes are also for protesting. So let it travel where it can be useful. Anyway, we had like about 20 models with you know, really, really very nice outfits from second-hand material, from banners. And the idea was also to present not just, you know, models as cloth hangers, but personalities. So it was actually more about the people than the the stuff.
And how so?
How so? How do you mean? What do you mean? No, what
like,
do you mean?
How did you
bring that across?
Yeah, well, yeah, two things, I guess. Where did you get the idea from that was important? And then, yeah, how did you choose to bring that across?
Yeah, the idea developed a little bit. Of course, we wanted to show that you can make amazing stuff from banners. And we created a lot of mystery because Extinction Rebellion was going to launch a label. So we got quite some interest for that. Actually, we got the presentation in the Bali. They hosted us for free to do the show there. But at the show itself, I was doing the presentation because I knew most about every outfit. But I prepared it, of course. But when people were walking, I thought, oh, yeah. But actually, the person wearing it is much more interesting than the whole stuff. So it also developed a bit. What did I want to say? Yeah, also the plan was that worked out to present a very diverse group. So, you know, not standard models, but we had a very old lady. We had a lady who is badly sighted. She came with a walking dog. Yeah, I thought that was actually awesome because she couldn't even see her own outfit properly. So it is just about the people and not about clothes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We had trans people and we had a woman who is quite, you know, large. So that's also nice to show.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, I was very happy with that, and so we did a little show in the Bali, but we had limited access because it was COVID, so we had only 14 people.
Yeah.
After that, we did a parade in the PC Hoofdstraat. You know it, eh? Now that's the shopping street where the super luxurious brands.
Louis
Vuitton.
It runs down, yeah, almost like towards Vondelpark from
that is
the outer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
from
Prada.
Like the Rijks, museum, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, that is it. And we had a parade in the middle of the street with smoke, biological smoke bombs and music. And that was sort of, well, probably they didn't care, but it was. So, you know, to show them your time is over, you know, we don't need labels and...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that was quite
That's
awesome.
Wonderful.
That was quite awesome.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the fashion show, we announced that we canceled the whole label because we don't want... Yeah, we don't... The last thing we need is more labels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of a label is, you know, ruining the planet.
And did you talk to any, or did any of the shop owners come out, and did they pay much attention?
You saw that people waiting in line for the expensive shops were looking, and, well, they looked amused. But I also noticed some security guards, you know, quickly locking the door. But, yeah, it was more symbolic, but there was quite a... reasonable press coverage, so we got the message a bit spread out. But no, I think, you know, in fashion, it's just not just the cheap change that do the harm.
Mm.
It's also the luxurious brands who make people believe that you're worth more if you have expensive bags and stuff. So, yeah, I think that is where it actually starts, that you need to be dressed super hip all the time.
Well, I guess it's the big brands that, like the big designers, they're not really called brands anymore, the big designers that are, like, running the runways, and then from there flows the rest of the fashion industry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, it's these big designers that set that there's always a new season, not like only of the weather and the climate, but also of the fashion, and that then everyone else must also keep that tempo, keep that rhythm, changing, keep evolving, keep buying new things.
No, indeed, they start, they keep the fire burning that you need something new all the time. And I don't know, I heard that people who buy super expensive stuff, they feel themselves worth more if they have a Hermes bag or something. That's totally the wrong idea. We just made a point there that their time is over. Well, they're still there, so but that was very nice indeed. But I was glad we cancelled the label. You know, I don't want to be a label holder.
Yeah, just one season was enough.
Yeah, it was actually, it was just a trick to get attention.
Yeah. And now there's some great outfits out there that can be used by the movement.
Yeah, they're available to the movement. And we sometimes, the people ask, can we use it? And we, everyone can use it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Get in contact. With you.
Sure. Yes, indeed. You can visit my garage and there it is. I'll show you the shell dress. It's really epic.
Really nice. Yeah, I want to see. And so there's an entire fashion department at XR, which is reasonably well staffed.
Yeah, well, I went a bit my own path with this project, because they do also a lot of other stuff, and it was a bit confusing. But there is quite a big fashion department. They do, for example, Guerrilla repairs.
Oh, cute!
Yeah, and it has a long tail.
Yeah, we call it a train.
A train?
In English, yeah, like the choo-choo train.
Oh.
Like, I don't know, I guess long, like with all these carriages, but not carriages, but yeah.
So there is a big fashion department, but I don't know, I wanted to focus on this project, and it takes a lot of time, so I went a bit my own way with people who want to participate, but some people are in more groups, and that's all fine.
Yeah, like you said earlier, everything takes time and energy, and there's only so much time and resources available, so you kind of got to prioritize and choose. It is so cute!
Oh yeah, and we also had bags in the shape of, we had signs, cardboard signs in the shape of handbags. So it was all, you know, really well thought of.
Yeah. It's amazing. That's very sexy.
Oh yeah, here is the tail.
It's hot.
The train.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm curious what they will do with it at the COP.
Me too. I can't wait to see.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the Nopulence. Then after that we that was done. Then,
eventually, then you arrived at this hot climate calendar.
Yes.
So, how did you get from working on the Nopulence? Well, yeah, the hot climate calendar. This is also, maybe we want to say a couple of sentences. I tried to describe briefly at the beginning, but maybe you want to say a couple of sentences about what that is, and then how did you get from one to the other?
Yeah, the hot climate calendar is a calendar of 12 months and 12 climate themes. Every theme, we did almost 12 photo shoots. There are rebels modeling in spicy outfits. We made that ourselves from second-hand material. Also nice is that on the back sides, if you don't like spicy rebels, you can put the back sides forward, and there are texts about the theme, also written by rebels and scientists, and it's made on 100% recycled paper. So yeah, that I'm really happy with that, to be honest.
Well, yeah, it's a huge project, like from making the materials to having a full-blown photo shoot. And from what I saw from your Instagram page, like I think there's one photo shoot in a cave or like outside of...
Oh yeah, that's in a bunker.
In a bunker. Which I couldn't even... it just didn't even look like it's in the Netherlands.
It's in IJmuiden, but it's very weird-shaped bunkers. Indeed, I didn't know it before. Yeah, there was a lot of organization. The idea is actually it's not to make money, it's just to spread awareness and, you know, spread knowledge and awareness about the climate in under the people. And it's, we want to get out of costs, and if we have, you know, it may be that we earn a few thousand euro that will go to Extinction Rebellion, of course. But it's strictly not a commercial project. And we had some really decent photographers taking the picture. So, yeah, the idea was that it should be really, you know, high quality. It should be really good and attractive. Do you want to see some test prints?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, if you've brought some along, that would be great.
Yeah, these are the tests.
Wow.
Some things are a little bit different. Yeah, it is finished the 12th of November. But yeah, this is the front page. Oh. It was hanging like this, yeah? Lying A3.
Okay. Yeah.
And it is...
Landscape.
It mm-hmm. is... actually, it is for 2022, but actually you can use it as a birthday calendar.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
only this... You should ignore, but this is not for your whole, you know, planning of the week, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah. you know, you can use it eternally until the apocalypse. That was the idea.
Good.
Okay. Right. Yeah, it's not on order.
Okay. Yeah, we're starting with December.
That will confuse you, maybe.
Oh, okay. So I should look at it in order.
Well, especially since January has a January-themed image. Yeah, this is, for example, January.
Wow, that looks icy.
Do you like it?
Yeah. Well, no, it looks hot. That's what I meant to
say.
Well,
this is actually New Year's dive.
It's actually New Year's Day.
No, it's not.
Okay, thank
God.
We
did this in July.
Good.
Yeah, because if the temperature rises, we will not have, you know, the next New Year's dive
right.
will be in hot weather.
Oh my gosh. Well, so maybe we should describe it a little bit for the listeners. So people are in their swimwear, in small, skimpy swimwear, and they're at the beach. Maybe this is also IJmuiden.
Yeah, this is Wijk aan Zee. This is Tata Steel. So this is a very heavy polluting industry. And I don't know if you don't know this phenomenon, but it's a normal New Year's dive. You have Unox, the sausage manufacturer. Do you know it?
No.
Yeah, they take control of the New Year's dive. They have standard hats, and there is written Unox on it.
Oh, okay.
So we made these hats, we knitted them from scraps, and this is the Extinction Rebellion New Year's dive hat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So it's you know, Dutch people will see it is a Unox hat, but then
that
is something you have to know it.
Yeah, but it's a bit of a tradition to go swimming at the beach on New Year's Day.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Have you done it?
Wow. No.
Yeah, I did
I'm not
it once,
Dutch yet. I'm not Dutch yet.
It's quite
that will
close.
Be my day, and then
the day that you do that.
Yeah.
Will it come?
that I go swimming.
Yeah,
maybe next year.
That is sort of like being baptized as Dutch.
Yeah, maybe. I haven't eaten a Hema sausage either.
Oh yeah, no, me neither.
But that one I probably don't do. I skip. But going swimming at the beach on New Year's Day, yeah, I would like to. It's scary. It's
but
really
don't,
scary.
Don't they do that all over the world?
Yeah, maybe. But in Sydney, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, no, probably not.
Yeah, I probably have been swimming on New Year's Day, but...
You didn't notice anything special then. But this one, we used actually a different picture. But this is, the theme is recycling.
I love the denim underwear.
Yeah, we improvised, I asked the models to improvise their own outfit from scrap. Leftover crap stuff. And for example, you don't see it, but he is a trans man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great tattoos.
Yeah, his tattoos are amazing. Yeah, he also tattoos himself.
Wow.
Yeah. But in the end, we chose a different picture. Let me see. That was February.
That's February. And then there's two people, I describe it a little bit. There's two people lying back, on, like, sort of looks like they're in a very large, like, garbage skip bin. And they're, one person's wearing, I think pretty sexy denim underwear. And the other person is wearing more, like, silky underwear. And, so one person in the denim... Yeah, it's the trans man, and the other person is in a female body, and they're lying back as if they're lying back on a really comfortable bed, but it's a pile of very soft looking, very plump garbage bags.
Yeah, indeed, and this is made at the collection center of the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was very nice. They said, "Oh, that's nice. Do your shoot and." They were very helpful.
Cool.
Yeah, this is the theme, art and activism.
Cool.
Yeah, so this is a very old lady and she's really, courageous. She is just going in actions and flyering and but I think it's great that she is in this calendar. Because all ages can be part of XR.
Yeah.
And he's just very nice. He's just very nice. It's two people in front of old banners.
Yeah. Also, the woman looks like, she's wearing like a very skimpy, old woman is wearing a very skimpy nighty, very short with just some thin straps. And the guy is wearing some white underwear that he's like seducingly pulling down on the
side.
Yeah,
he did his best.
Yeah, it's very hot.
He's quite hot, so... No, but actually, no. Everyone in this calendar is really, really nice. It's not about just images of people. Everyone is really, really nice.
Wow.
You're
very lucky to have worked with all these people.
But if you're not nice, you cannot be in it. Because it is more about... working together, personalities who are active for the climate. It would be weird. Yeah, don't you? You look surprised.
No, I guess not. Yes and no, because I think like some people are very active and hard workers, but they're not necessarily like so sweet or friendly. Yeah, but it's really one, it makes sense that they are, because, at least everyone that is active is coming from a really warm place.
That is what I mean. Yeah. And you don't have to be super sweet.
Okay.
Actually, yesterday someone told me, you're not super sweet. So maybe I am not super
salty.
Sweet.
It's salty.
Everyone did this out of idealism and, was really working together. Do you know the, this is April, do you know the Action Rebellion of One? Yeah, that is an action where people sit on the street with a sign.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do know. Yeah.
And this is the erotic version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that on the Zuidas area, you know, where the big financial institutions are.
Yeah. This is quite near the station, isn't it?
Yeah, this is very much near the station.
Yeah, I recognize this street.
Yeah, so... actually, do you know him?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he's a bit of a... Yeah, this is actually a secret. Because I want people to know only when the calendar is appearing. But he is quite a nasty journalist. So he's a bit controversial. But, you know, in the end, he is always showing up at our actions. So I think in the end, you know, his way, his manner of... interviewing is a bit nasty.
So but he's not sweet.
He is not sweet.
But he's perhaps underneath it all coming from a good place.
Indeed, because I asked him, do you want to be in our calendar? And I explained what it was about. And he said, yes, we will do it. So, you know, he can say no. He was doing it. And, you know... A lot of people say, oh, he's, you know, he's from hell. And In actions, I never saw anyone of the big newspapers, you know, Volkskrant, NRC, they never come to actions. He is all the time at our actions and putting attention to our actions. So, I mean, is he a friend or is he an enemy?
Very interesting.
Yeah, just that, things are not always, you know, flat, like, oh, his questions are a bit difficult, so he's terrible. No, he's all, you know, he gave us a lot of media coverage. Yeah, actually, this is the trans model I told you about. She lives in the Belmach.
Okay, wait, yeah, let's describe the image. So there's a trans woman on the left, and she's holding a cardboard sign and it says I am afraid of the sea level rising, and then on the right is another person from Extinction Rebellion and they're speaking to the media, and in between the two and a bit further to the back or away from the camera is the journalist holding a microphone it looks like asking some questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's actually stunning. Also working as a model. She's a fabulous model. She's in it two times.
Good.
And here we
I'm looking forward to the next month.
Yeah, that is amazing. Her second picture is even better. Here we collected some stories, some in English, some in Dutch. We did everyone his own language.
Mm-hmm.
On the backside are stories from rebels who did Rebellion of One and what their experience was. So, you know, the idea was to give the calendar also a much more, you know, more informative aspect. Oh yeah, this is May. What you can see is a yellow boat and on it is written Burgers beslissen, dus that means citizens decide. That is one of the demands of Extinction Rebellion. And, this is supposed to be an orgy.
On top of the boat. The boat is on land.
Yeah, the boat's on land. It's supposed to be always on land. Oh. So it is always, you know, on this trailer, they drive it around. It is never in the water. Mm-hmm. That is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be on land.
Wow. Well, lucky people having an orgy in May.
Yeah, this was actually last month, but it was hard to get it all done. We had to, you know, be creative with the timing. And this is the erotic climate clown.
Yes.
So that's also
great
something
underwear
new
and straps.
Yes, he made his. He is a very good designer. He made his own outfits. This is the theme biodiversity. So you see, well, you don't actually, this is in a butterfly garden, only not much was left of it in the picture. But you see, this is a, you know, a rebel with bad eyesight, so that's why she has the dog.
Yeah, the seeing eye dog.
And these are just two crazy magicians, Magic Tom and Yuri.
And you've got the Sextinction Rebellion banner.
Yeah, we made a banner out of it.
And there's a lot of willows and a lot of different grasses and some flowering plants.
And we made some smoke.
Because I like smoke. This is the smoke. Right.
I like smoke.
Yeah. And where is the where's the location?
Oh, yes, it's actually in Amsterdam Noord. You have the butterfly garden Mot in Mokum.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Oh, you have to go.
Yeah.
And what's the significance of the playing cards?
Well, actually,
scattered around.
Yeah, my idea was to make a Las Vegas showgirl scene. So her in the front, as you know, the biodiversity, you know, showgirl.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Only you can buy something whilst it's still left. What are you gonna? Oh, you can win something whilst you still can.
Yeah, like the idea was like, you know, biodiversity. Yeah, well, you know, it's epic. It's amazing. Only this woman, she moves very cautiously because she can see very little.
Yeah.
So she, she was not moving like a, you know, like a ballet dancer. But no, I think it's totally fine. I'm very happy that she's in this picture.
It's a beautiful outfit. It's like a very skimpy dress made out of leaves. And also some flowers with a very impressive headpiece.
Oh yeah, I made that. That gave me so much headache, that headpiece, because it has to stand up, you know, really well.
Yeah, it's very tall.
Yeah, but there is
it must be like at least 40 centimeters.
Yeah.
Or more.
In the back are some stories about biodiversity. What is it and why is it important? Okay, July is animal love. So this is actually on the same area
location, right? Yeah.
Why do you love
the positioning of the people and the pigs together? So there's like, it looks like we're on a small community farm. What plant is that?
I don't know, is it potatoes maybe? All over the place.
It might be potatoes. Something like a potato plant, like a small bushy thing.
Yeah.
But maybe not potato. Could also be small aardperen
plants. No, you say it looks like a potato plant. Yeah, I agree.
And then there's some, and then there's, but there's like a pig, sty, what do you, living area at the front, and then there's three really hot women hanging out with the pigs, lounging with the pigs,
indeed.
The women are wearing white swimwear or white underwear.
Yeah, it was supposed to get super muddy, only it was quite dry, so it didn't become as muddy as we hoped.
Well, yeah, it's July, so not so much rain.
No. Indeed. But yeah, these are then pigs that have a very nice life.
And it says take care of Mother Earth.
Indeed. Yeah. July,
sorry,
August.
Woo-hoo!
Okay, so, yeah, this is a pride scene with, you know, pride rebels at the Homo Monument. Yeah, you know it, eh?
In Amsterdam.
Actually,
and
yeah.
There's a lot of people hanging out, sort of parading, sort of lounging, sort of posing on the Homo Monument.
Yes, and I was also happy to get these two involved.
Yeah.
They are not rebels, but they are what you call leernichten. Do you know what I mean?
No.
That's gay people have a fetish for leather.
Oh, okay. What is the word for leather? Leer.
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 Leernichten.
Leernichten.
Yeah, okay. That's how they call it.
Yeah.
That's what they call themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
But they just, you know, they're addicted to leather. They like leather, and it's a couple, actually.
That looks like very, these leather pants.
Yeah.
They're so, very soft leather pants.
Well, I specifically asked if they could wear their leather outfits.
Yeah.
Because I think we should be, you know, you can say, oh, we're Extinction Rebellion, yeah, no leather. But we welcome everyone. So I think it's nice that they come as themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and we had a lot of people who wanted to write something about this. So it is full of text.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's nice, eh? So I'm in this one, actually. These are the... Oh, well, are we getting short on time?
We have 4 minutes left. And then there's another program after at 8, so we have to end at 8.
Okay, quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the three demands with nude people. But yeah, you see the calendar is not so nude. Not really nude in completion.
Yeah, so there's people wearing very skimpy underwear and they're standing on the street. I think, yeah, also in Amsterdam, but could be another Dutch city, and holding signs, saying de eerste eis, de tweede eis, and de derde eis.
Yeah, these are the three demands.
They're written
on the bodies. So,
I get you.
You know, if you don't read it, if there are tits in the message, then I don't know when you will read it. Actually, I'm in this one. But this one was not staged. It was so good that I bought the picture from the photo agency. Mm. Because you cannot improve this.
But was it not scary to be doing this?
Yeah, I'm not difficult about my nude body. I don't care. But, it's not that it's for free or something. But we were convinced that we are comfortable with it, and actually it is, you know, it is actually very cool to do it, and
liberating.
It's liberating, and there is nothing wrong with your body, so it was a bit to do it to start with. It was a bit, you know, you have to, you know, go over a border because no one is putting out their clothes in public normally.
Yeah,
but we were totally fine with it, and we have done it a few times with different messages. It's very nice, actually.
How did people respond?
Well, people responded very nicely.
Good.
Very respectful, you know, people complimented us, and we really got front pages.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is not, you know, the idea is just get attention for the message.
Yeah.
And really some men said, oh, Stephanie, that was a very nice action.
Yeah, thank you. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think they like it, and they have seen tits before. So, I mean, it's not, oh, wow, I see some tits for the first time in my life.
No, I hope not.
October. This is the Delta Werke. Do you know it? It's a Dutch, front line at the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a big piece of work, but it will not be enough to block the water if we do nothing. So that is the theme. And this is again the dark trans model.
Yeah.
And her outfit has the shape of the structure.
Yeah, I see that. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was difficult to make. These are three November. Rebels. This is about fossil fuels is not sexy. That is just the important theme.
Mm-hmm.
And this is at the Shell oil places in near Rotterdam.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the last one is the apocalypse. So this is a drag king and a drag queen. And they're, you know, doing their thing after the world has gone to bits.
This is in the bunker.
Is it? Yeah, this is in the bunker, yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, there's a lot of smoke, yellow smoke, and people, yeah, in a time that looks like the apocalypse and in sexy clothing. One person is sort of lying and the other person is licking their inner thigh.
Licking, yeah. Yes, licking.
All right, well, I have to say thank you so much for coming on. It's been really fun. And thanks, Radio Patapu, and see you all next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See you at the march tomorrow. If you're interested in hearing other episodes, you can search for Soil Matters either on Mixcloud or on any podcast platform. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review and please rate the podcast so that other people interested in similar topics can find the podcast easily. And you're also welcome to follow Soil Matters on Instagram and also to get in contact, send a message, and let us know your thoughts. Thanks for listening.